Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Juno, it is Monday, June 9th, and we've got a great show. Barbara Levalee will be here to talk about her art. She's doing a book signing at Hearthside Books this weekend. Dr. Alexander Tudanoff will talk about his upcoming classes and concert. We'll also hear about a new program from Alaska Department of Fish and Game called Alaskans Afield, and we'll talk pollen with Teresa Nino from the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The National Congress of American Indians Mid-Year Conference kicked off Sunday in Anchorage. Jocelyn Estes is the news director with KNBA in Anchorage. Jocelyn, what's on the agenda for NCAI?
A lot of the sessions have to do with tribal governance, land and resource management, housing, health, transportation, education. And there are sessions on issues like violence against women, food security, and handling the effects of climate change. NCAI's mid-year conference basically is the time for tribes to get together and tackle some of these big issues to develop strategies and adopt resolutions that set priorities and set direction for NCAI.
What are some of the top issues Alaska tribes are addressing?
One of the big issues for tribes here is that the state of Alaska does not recognize tribes. It does not recognize the right of tribes to manage their own affairs in certain areas and the need to consult with tribes as governing bodies on issues. And this plays out in a lot of different arenas. For instance, right now in court, the state of Alaska is fighting with tribes over translating election materials, which is an issue. It has to do with voting rights. And the tribes are repeatedly in court against the state to try to establish, defend, or protect their right to manage Indian child welfare, which is pretty much a management issue in other states. I think that states accept the right of tribes to manage. One of the biggest issues is subsistence, food that is gathered from the land and shared with family and community members. And there are two fish and game management systems in Alaska, federal and state. The federal fish and game management managers recognize subsistence as a priority use, and the state doesn't. And there are other big issues, the lack of clean water and sanitation in dozens of villages, high rates of suicide, and so on.
That was Jocelyn Estes with KNBA. Tune in this week for more coverage about NCAI. Several South Dakota tribes are seeing a bit of drought relief after a few days of storms. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The U.S. Drought Monitor is published once a week by the University of Nebraska. It shows four categories of drought, from D0, which depicts abnormally dry conditions, to D4, exceptional drought. The Northern Plains had a somewhat dry autumn and a cold, dry winter. That has led to parts of the region being classified in moderate drought, including Flandreau Santee Sioux and Yankton Sioux tribal lands in southeast South Dakota. But the area has had several days of heavy rain, not enough to completely erase the drought, but conditions are better than they were. While most of the state's tribal lands have enough moisture, much of the Yankton Sioux land is still in moderate drought, while the Flandreau Santee Sioux area is regarded as abnormally dry. Patches of tribal land in northeast Nebraska are going through dry conditions as well. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
During this week in 1996, the historic Cobell Indian Trust class action lawsuit was filed. The lawsuit against the federal government for the mismanagement of individual Indian trust accounts was settled for $3.4 billion more than a decade later. Plaintiffs across the country are waiting for their settlement checks, and many have expressed frustration about the delay. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:05 p.m. You're listening on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and it is a typical Juno afternoon outside. Numerous showers today, highs around 56. Tonight, more rain. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 58, light winds, and tomorrow night, decreasing clouds, slight chance of rain showers, lows around 45, light winds. So we've got a great show for you today. One of the best things about being host on Juno Afternoon is you get to chat with some amazing artists. And we happen to have one of those artists in the studio today. Her name is Barbara Lavallee. She's a renowned artist. Her images are inspired by Alaskan communities and landscapes. She's lived in Alaska since 1970. She has 16 children books, lots of books on her paintings, and she also is responsible for Mama, Do You Love Me, which is an iconic children's book that's been published in at least 16 different languages, if not more. So, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. So I have in my hand this beautiful book called The Best of Barbara, and it's a new edition, correct?
Yes, it is. It just came out. The ink is probably dry by now, but not for long.
It's dry. It's beautiful. So tell us a little bit about this book.
This is a book that came about because we decided that it would be nice to have a small book of favorite images. And so this is the culmination of over 40 years of work for me. And we've just sort of picked out some of the most favorite ones that we've got and put them in this book.
Yeah, they're lovely. They have some verbiage around each one, and they're just really beautiful. The one that I'd like to share is Alaska Kids, and there's a beautiful Barbara, like a signature Barbara Lavallee picture with kids, and it says, "I'm so happy to have been able to raise my sons in Alaska and now watch my grandchildren growing up here. We've been fortunate to be a part of a tight-knit communities where children have the freedom to explore, adventure, create, and flourish. Our kids go to school and play and grow like children anywhere, but with the added delight of having a wilderness for backyard, snowmen for neighbors, and the northern lights for bedtime entertainment." That is so beautiful. So after each painting, there's a little story about it.
Well, there's a little story about each painting, and then we've divided it up into sections. And so you had just read the introduction to the Alaska Kids, but we also did Hot Tubs and My Alaska and quilting. And cats.
Oh, yes, there is a big thing about cats.
Yes, very definitely cats.
Yes, that's great. And the hot tubs are fun. They were really fun. And I like the way you did a painting for a maternity wing or a birth center in Seward, and you were trying to get a...
Well, it was actually the mammogram room.
Oh, there you go, the mammogram room.
The mammogram room, and they allowed me to do naked ladies.
And they're beautiful. And you were saying that you were trying to make a fabric out of that.
We talked about it. Actually, none of the fabric producers have quite enough courage to put out naked lady fabric.
Anybody out there taking the bait? I bet in Alaska we'll get it done, right?
I would think that in Alaska that would be the place to get it done.
Exactly. So I want to talk about your book signings, and then I want to talk about your journey as an artist. If
all right. Right.
Okay, so you're signing books at Changing Tides Quilt Shop today.
That's correct. There's a quilting cruise in town today, and I will be there. Well, I'll be going back there as soon as we finish this interview, and I'll probably be there until 4:30 or 5 this afternoon, and then tomorrow at Annie Kale's from 11 to 3.
That sounds great. That sounds great. So, so you should go and buy this book and get it signed, and I'm sure she'll have other books, too, if you want to.
I have all kinds of stuff for you. I've got prints, I've got books, you name it, I've got it.
That would be great. And we were talking before the break, my mother's favorite cousin was a huge fan of hers. Unfortunately, she's passed on. If not, I would have Barbara sign every one of these and send them to her. So that would be great. So let's talk a little bit about how you became who you are. What made you choose the medium that you work with, and when did you start?
I came to Alaska in 1970 as a teacher for the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and I worked at Mount Edgecombe High School, and I was the art teacher, and I've always felt as if everything before coming to Alaska was just practice for getting here. Because I found my voice as an artist in Sitka and at Mount Edgecombe. I had the advantage of having students from all over Alaska, so I was exposed to all of the different Native cultures, and I have a very idealized way of looking at village life because I saw it through the eyes of my students. I never saw it as, you know, treeless tundra with unpainted houses and, you know, kind of a grim landscape. I saw it the way my students did, as home and family.
Yeah, and it's obvious in everything you do, and it sounds like you fell in love with that land as well.
I did.
It helped you become the artist that you are today.
Yes, I think very definitely. I don't know whether I could have done what I've done anyplace else. I think that I found Alaska to be a place that offers opportunities. If you get an idea, you can make it happen.
It's true, but you also have to have the talent behind it. So, and your talent is quite remarkable.
Thank you. Thank you.
So when did you decide, okay, I'm going to stop teaching, if you have, stop teaching art and just do it full time?
It was the day I was supposed to sign a contract.
Another Alaskan story. This is sounds so familiar.
I had taken several years off to have my second child, and I was about to go back, you know, to my teaching job. And my husband and I went to lunch that day, and he said, "What do you really want to do?" And I said, "I really want to do art." And so instead of signing my contract, I resigned.
And where were you living at that time?
We were living in Sitka.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Sitka for 10 years before moving to Girdwood. And I lived in Girdwood for 10 years before moving to Anchorage, which is where I am now.
Okay. So when was this when you had that epiphany?
This was in 1975. So I had been in Alaska for 5 years by that time.
Okay. And then when you dedicated yourself to art, how was that process? Was it always,
watercolor? No, I think when I first started out, I was doing very realistic work. And once I figured out that I could actually do it, it sort of left me wondering, there's got to be more than this, you know, because a camera can do it better than I could. And there were things that I just really wanted to make mine. And it was in a process of years. You notice that both my faces are divided, you know, half of it is darker and half is lighter. And I discovered that when I was doing a silk screen print, which is laying down flat areas of color. And I wanted to do people, but in order to put the features in, it was either, you know, put them in with lines and then I discovered that if I draw a profile down the middle of the face and make half of it darker, I could make a very stylized look. My people all look the same. The only thing that's different is their hair or what they're wearing or their size, because even the children look very much like my other people, my adults. But I wasn't interested in portraiture. I wanted to express something else, and I wanted it to be colorful and energetic and indicative of Alaska, and I hope I've been able to accomplish that.
That's great. How long did it take you to discover that, you know, okay, I'm not going to focus on the techniques that have already been mastered, I'm going to have my own signature type of artwork?
Well, you know, I don't know that you ever stop practicing. I still practice. Mm. I still practice every day. So it continues to evolve.
That's great. It's really wonderful. So 1975, so you've been devoting your art since your time to your art.
I have been
then.
Doing full-time art since 1975.
Wow, that's terrific. That's terrific. So I have one last question because I know you need to go back to your book signing. So let's talk a little bit about Mama, Do You Love Me? You
okay.
want to talk to me a little bit about how that book came to be?
It was one of those once-in-a-lifetime treasures. The book fell in my lap. The publisher contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in doing it, and it was just a perfect venue for me because it gave me the opportunity to be both the mother and the child, and in a culture that has absolutely fascinated me for many, many years. And fortunately, the book has been very well received. It's been out for almost 25 years now, and it's still making money.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, I said that was the last question, but I'm going to ask you one last. So what's next? So we have this book out, 2014, fresh off the presses, is what you're saying.
I have another book that I'm going to be doing next year with a writer who spent many, many years up in Wainwright. Her name is Dawn Wayawana, and it is, I had the opportunity to read the manuscript probably 20 years ago and fell in love with it then, and several publishers have expressed an interest in it, but always felt as if it needed to be longer. And just recently, Dawn and I have decided to do the book with Katrina Pearson here at Taku, and we're going to do it. There are 12 lines of text, and it is about it is an art book about the seasons of Alaska, and the writing is just so incredibly beautiful and spare that it just doesn't need to be any more than that.
Yeah, that
so we're hoping that one will be out next spring.
Great. So we'll be back here again.
Absolutely.
For that book signing.
Absolutely.
That sounds wonderful. So if you're just joining us, Barbara Levely is here. She's a renowned artist. Her subject is Alaska. She's got a new book out, The Best of Barbara, and she is signing books today at the Changing Tides Quilt Shop until 4:30 and Annie Kales from 11 to 3. So come on out and get your signed copy. I've got mine. We're going to go to Writer's Almanac. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 9th of June, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, I Get a Kick Out of You, You're the Top. Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love. Cole Porter, born in Peru, Indiana, 1891. Most of his great songs written within a 10-year period. Between 1928, his first musical, Paris, and a terrible riding accident he suffered in 1937. His horse rolled and crushed his legs. Doctors said that his right leg should be amputated, maybe his left as well, and Cole Porter refused. He preferred to be in pain. And he lived with pain for more than 20 years, continuing to write songs, until 1958, when after 34 operations, he finally agreed to have the leg amputated, an operation from which he never recovered. He told friends, I'm only half a man now, and never wrote another song. For the musical Kiss Me, Kate, he wrote, of all the types of men I've met in our democracy, I hate the most the athlete with his manner bold and brassy. He may have hair upon his chest, but sister, so has Lassie. Oh, I hate men. It's the anniversary of the publication of the first true dime novel, 1860, a novel called Malieska, The Indian Wife of the White Hunter by Ann Stevens. It was wrapped in a salmon-colored cover, and it actually did cost 10 cents. Theodore Dreiser tried writing dime novels in the Diamond Dick series. Louisa May Alcott published more than 30 of them under a pseudonym, A.M. Barnard. She liked writing them, thought they were easier to write, novels with Indians and pirates and wolves and bears and damsels in distress in them. Upton Sinclair wrote boys' adventure novels. He would dictate them to a stenographer, about 6,000 or 8,000 words a day. And it's the birthday of the novelist Baroness Berta von Suttner, born in Prague, 1843. She traveled all over Europe, and at the age of 33, she became secretary to the industrialist Alfred Nobel. Bertha Suttner was a peace activist, very active in the peace movement in Europe. Alfred Nobel had made his fortune as the inventor of dynamite and later through the development of weapons. And it was her influence on him that convinced Nobel to leave money for the creation of the Nobel Peace Prize. Here's a poem for today by Angela Janda at 4:45. I was feeling lonely, so I went outside to the wind-swept yard, and beyond that to the wind-tousled outer yard, and found where last night, in the moonlight, we left two sets of boot prints when you stopped on your way through the darkness to bring a lemon bar and a movie, and beside ours the tracks of the smallest thing with claws which must have followed some time later, and I chased its tiny prints and our mud-wash indents to the far back gate and through the gate out to where the land is still dirt and brush and bushes and cow pies, my hair pinned to my head, but still blowing, blowing, and finally a hard breath, and I could see through lonely to the wide open, long, blue lines of sunset, moonlit night, the airplanes trailing one another down to tarmac, all those people landing home. At 4:45, a poem by Angela Janda, from Small Rooms with Gods, published by Finishing Line Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. It's 3:22 p.m. I am Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And I am thrilled to announce that on the phone is Dr. Alexander Tudinov. Dr. Tudinov comes to Juno and teaches piano. He's part of the UAS. He's an artist in residence at UAS. He's also an artist in residence. He's a professor of piano and artist in residence at Southern Oregon University. He's widely recognized as one of the most outstanding virtuosos of the former Soviet Union, and we are really happy to have you on the show. Hello, Dr. Tudinov. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. My head is growing bigger and bigger with every introduction.
That's good. I think
I can't believe I've done all this thing.
And that was the abridged version, as you and I know, but maybe not everyone else knows, but that was definitely the abridged version. So, Dr. Tudinov, you come to Juno quite frequently. Can we talk about what you do when you're here? I know you work with students. You have a long history of working with really promising award-winning potential students and award-winning students. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I would talk, and I try to be brief. It's, of course, a special place in my heart for all my students in Juno. There's a small correction. I'm no longer affiliated with UAS. Why? Because we thought it would be a one-year affair. It ended up being 7 years affair. 7 years I kept coming a few times a year. But then things changed. I became a new father of twins.
No, congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, it's a blessing, of course, but it's a demand and a responsibility. So, long story short, I I ended my tenure, my contract, with a lot of people who just keep in touch with me, and some very impressive, success stories, and a couple of students who actually came from Juno to continue studying with me in Oregon, and some just flew over my head and landed in San Francisco Bay Area and beyond, and I'm just extremely happy and blessed to be in love with Juno and be proud of it. So, since the end of the tenure and my relationship with UAS, we are still wonderful friends, but I come to Juno this time as a private party, and my old friends and my former students and my new friends arranged this so-called Tutnov immersion, they call it, and most of it will be happening at the Northern Lights Church, including the two performances, one opening one by myself, yours truly, on Tuesday, June 17th, and finishing with a performance by a participant of the immersion, or if you want to call them the victims of Tutnov, that will play the closing gala on Sunday, is it the 22nd, I think. And I can give you the times, I would be delighted. But so the main correction is this time may or may not be my last time to Juno, or it could be my first time in this new role.
Okay.
Because I can't seem to, burn any bridges, because I like Juno too much.
Oh, that sounds great. So you're having a concert on Tuesday, June 17th at Northern Lights at 8:30, and that will be your work. And then on Sunday, the 22nd, there's going to be a recital of the students who went through the week long immersion. Can we talk a little? Are you full? Like, can we talk about the immersion? Or is there a few spots open? Should we talk about?
There are spots open, definitely. My concert, though, is at 7:30.
Oh, my apologies.
I will still be playing at 8:30, so those people who show up at 8:30 still get a taste of Tutnov, unless I collapse in the middle.
No, let's make sure that it is definitely at 7:30. I'm going to check my source and make sure that that was correct on the website, and if it's not, I'll get that change because I didn't come up with that number by myself. But let's say 7:30 for the 17th. But who are the candidates for your program?
Good question. Mostly it's the people I already know from my time at UAS, with one or two exceptions. Actually, some of the people who teach piano would be taking lessons from me. And people who perform, and also I have a couple of young students, middle school and high school. My friends at the Thrush Hill music school. By the way, that's where the website's hosted. It's just at thrushhill.org/Tutnov. But even if they go to the Thrush Hill Music School website, they'll get plenty of information about the lessons and schedule. I believe I have been scheduled for 12 or 14 in the course of Tuesday through Saturday, and those are one-on-one lessons, but also Saturday at 9 a.m. we have a master class, so people don't have to perform in order to attend a master class, but I'll be talking music, not just piano music, but music making for anybody. So we try to keep it user-friendly and open, but people who get one-on-one lessons are encouraged but not required to take part in the Sunday gala that I believe, it's at 3 p.m. on June 22nd, and all of the events actually take place at the Northern Light United Church.
Right, and you could find out all the particulars at Thrush Hill Music
www.ndnr.org.
That's great. So that's a really wide variety of skills that you just described, or at least that's what it sounded like to me. You have piano teachers, you have performers, you have middle schoolers, you have high schoolers.
So, I try to be versatile. Basically, my main goal is so that people don't hate classical music, so that high schoolers don't think it's not cool to play piano, because I think it's very cool to play piano, and even classical piano. And that's what I encourage for, I think I have a pretty good track record. I do believe if people leave a lesson and they think, oh, there's no hope for me, then I fail as a teacher. If people leave a lesson and they say, I know how to improve, I'm going to practice, then I think I've got them somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And it's interesting because I would imagine that not all musical virtuosos are also teachers. So it sounds like you have a healthy performing schedule, but you also love to teach.
Right. I believe that teacher should be a role model for his students, and at least if he or she says one thing but doesn't do it, then there's a little bit of a hypocrisy.
Right.
On the other hand, I've been trained in one of the most prestigious schools. It's just being in the right place in the right time for me, pure luck, which came with the responsibility. Since I know so much about piano playing and can address it on, you know, any level, from the concert virtuoso to somebody who's just getting started, I have to share what I know before I, you know, croak.
Or before you train.
I am a Russian, so of course, like Tolstoy and Dostoevsky, we always have to throw those sad thoughts.
Yes, but you're from good stock, so you're going to outlive us all anyway. And actually, your twins might run you ragged before you actually keel over. Is that true?
I know. That's another responsibility. I probably have to stay around for a lot longer.
Well, we hope so. And we hope you keep coming back to Juno. But next week, on the 17th at 7:30 at Northern Lights, you could hear Dr. Tudinov play. And then if you're interested to sign up or participate in his one-on-one lessons or the group masterclass, you could find out at
Thrushhill Music.org. And their website is thrushhill.org.
Okay, great. Thrushhill.org. And then there is the concert at 3 p.m. on the 22nd, and all of this is the Northern Lights.
And a master class the day before, Saturday at 9 p.m. I'm sure everybody's, all the listeners are writing it down like mad. But if they're not, they can check out the website, it's thrushhill.org.
Right.
And I have to say, this is so exciting. It's just really exciting. In July, I will play several concerts in Europe. I go to France and Italy and Croatia. And I'm excited about this. But my return trip to Juno and this opportunity for the Tudinov immersion is really, it's so exciting.
It's a very, very exciting and unique opportunity for us. So thank you, and I hope you keep on coming. And I'll see everybody on that Tuesday, June 17th concert at 7:30. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Likewise. Welcome back to the show. It's 3:34 p.m. That was an excerpt of Dr. Tudinov's recording. So, yes, he'll be in town next week. Find out all at thrushmusic.org. So our next guest is Tenny Bench. She is a wildlife education specialist with the Alaska Department of Fish Game, and she's here to talk about a new opportunity to learn outdoor skills. Hi, Tenny. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So what is this new opportunity called Alaskans Afield?
Alaskans Afield is a set of classes that we're offering this Saturday, or this summer on Saturdays, as a chance for people in the community, families, young adults and adults to come out and learn some different outdoor skills. We just finished up the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program, and that was very successful, but it's very much geared towards women. And so we tried to pick the classes from Bow that were a lot of fun and that people enjoyed, and we wanted to be able to offer them out to the community as well. So,
okay. And yeah. Bow being Becoming an Outdoor Woman.
Yeah.
So this has a much wider audience.
It does. It's for families. It's for friends. If you wanted to learn some different outdoor skills and don't have anybody to learn them with, bring a friend along or just come on your own. And it's a chance to get those skills and become more familiar in a hands-on environment, outdoors in Juneau. So
more confidence as
well.
Yeah,
more confidence.
Let's talk about the skills. What are the skills that we would learn?
So we have a series throughout the summer. The first one we're doing is an outdoor cooking and Dutch ovens class, which will be really fun. It's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on June 28th, and that one will be, you know, using our camp stoves. We'll learn how to use Dutch ovens, cook over open fire, and enjoy hopefully a delicious lunch while we're out there. So that's the first one.
Where is it?
That one's going to be offered at Ocarec.
Okay.
So we'll pick one of the shelters out there and probably cook down on the beach and just have, you know, if the weather's poor, then we'll move under the shelter, but hopefully just outside.
No poor weather. This is just the, you know, weather front going through.
The way the summer's been.
We've all been brainwashed. But before we move on, let's talk about Dutch ovens. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Dutch ovens, I think about cakes while camping. Is that correct?
Somewhat. Cakes and cobblers, but we've done the class where we've actually roasted a whole chicken or made halibut inside the Dutch oven. So it's, you know, that cast iron, not a skillet, but a pot that you cook over coals, and you can make all kinds of stuff. So chilies, soups.
So this is camping, not necessarily backpacking.
This would not be backpacking. Okay. I would not recommend a Dutch oven backpacking. But we will have some backpacking stoves. So we'll also cook over some small stoves.
How to
stoves
start
as
the
well.
Backpacking stove without taking off your eyebrows? That's something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, there you go. That's a great skill to have.
All righty. I'm not talking from experience, of course. I have my eyebrows. But anyway, so that's June 28th, outdoor cooking. And that's at Ocarec. And let's say somebody is listening and they say, I'm never going to remember the dates or so on and so forth. Is there a website?
Yes, there is. So the Fish and Game website, if you go to adfg.alaska.gov, there's a link under the calendar of events. And you'd go and find on June 28th or just look for Dutch oven cooking and click on that. And then there's the full schedule with the registration form. So we're asking that people pre-register for the classes just so that we know how many people we have. And we'll limit the size of the class to probably about 12 to 16 people. So we want it to be small and intimate so that people actually have the chance to learn the skills rather than, you know, just, and they, we want it really hands-on so that we're all interacting.
Is there a cost?
There is. It's $20 per person, but if you bring somebody under 18, so if you bring a child with you, the child is free. Okay. So it's pretty reasonable.
And they could eat your cake, maybe.
They absolutely can.
If there is
we'll
cake.
Eat everything we have.
Okay. So there is one class, which is at the end of the month, is cooking.
Yep.
And what are the others?
So the others are outdoor survival. That one's in July, a GPS and geocaching adventure, which would be it's pretty fun. We'll go out on the refuge and actually go find some geocaches and check for wildlife sign and tracks. Then we're doing an introduction to fly fishing and then an introduction to shooting sports with air guns. And those the dates can be found on the website. I think that's the easiest way.
Let's talk about survival, so outdoor survival. What would that class cover?
So that one we're having Riley Woodford with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game teach it, and he'll show you how to build a shelter, make a fire, kind of keep safe if you're lost, what to do to prevent getting lost in different situations and how to signal for help. So just a lot of different skills that will help you be more confident when you head out into the backcountry and, you know, having the appropriate equipment.
Okay. And if people are, there's all the information at the Alaska Department Fish and Game website, mm-hmm. so you could just search for that or go to
adfg.alaska.gov, and then under the calendar of events.
Okay. Is there a number, like somebody's listening and saying, you know, I really want to know about this, and I actually want to talk to somebody. Is there a number?
There is, yeah. If you want to give a call to 465-8547. That would be the number to call. Kristen Romanoff is taking the registrations, and so that's an email that you could email as well. So Kristen Romanoff, or kristen.romanoff@alaska.gov for more information.
Okay, that's great. And then, so you look like you maybe have a half a dozen classes already set
mm-hmm,
up, and
I do.
The fee is $20 for
each
one.
Yep.
And then you said there might be a backpacking class as well?
That's definitely a possibility. So we're piloting the program this summer to see how it goes, see how many people sign up and show up. And we'd like to continue offering the classes, so see what the needs of Juneau are and just continue. So backpacking, possibly different shooting. We've talked about intro to deer hunting, just trying to build that skill base and get people outside and just comfortable living where we live. So
that would be great. Are you going to teach any of these classes?
I am. I'm teaching a couple of them. I'll be teaching the Dutch oven and outdoor cooking, and then the geocaching.
Okay, well, before I go, so since you're cooking, you're doing the cooking class.
Yes.
The outdoor cooking, not just a cooking class. So what's the menu? Have you decided?
We haven't decided yet. We haven't gotten that far. And we might just wait until we see who our audience is. If we have a lot of kids that come, mm-hmm. we'll definitely want a different menu than if we have more adults. But I promise that it'll be good,
okay.
and hopefully we'll have a variety of fish and meats and then some desserts.
And have you done any of these before? This is an upcoming pilot program. It hasn't happened yet.
The Alaskans Afield is a pilot program, so we're doing it here in Juneau and then also out in the Matsu Valley.
Oh, cool.
With a different selection of classes. So, no, we haven't done this program. We did something similar last fall for families and didn't get very many people to show up, so we're going to try it again.
Okay. Well, you know, feel free to come back a week before each one of these classes and chat up what's going on.
Yeah.
It'd be great. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity because we call it our backyard, but it's wilderness out there.
It is, and it's a great place to go play. So having those skills is a good thing.
Great. Well, thanks for coming in today. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for having me.
This is Bird Note. Today we're standing on a boardwalk overlooking a marsh. These clicks and oinks tell us a Virginia rail is close by. But rails are rarely seen. The Virginia rail is a secretive bird, a relative of coots and cranes. It's a bird you'll more often hear than spy. It's named for its narrow body, as skinny as a rail, an adaptation to its favorite marshy habitats. It walks here hidden, squeezing its slender body through the dense reeds and grasses. We're going to have to watch carefully. Check out that opening in the marsh grass over there. We might see the rail pass through it to the next patch of dense reeds. The sounds seem to be coming this way. There it is, out in the open, however briefly. Amazing! It looks like a tiny heron. It's not much bigger than a robin. This rail is bright orangey-brown overall, with gray cheeks and a long red bill. We're lucky to have seen a Virginia rail. It may be a long time before we see another, but we'll not soon forget that distinctive voice. If you missed seeing this one, catch it on our Facebook page. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, meet researchers and range managers working on food security for the far north. On Science for Alaska, Reindeer, Tundra Gold. Then, imagine losing your ability to speak. The documentary Afterwards at 9 movingly illuminates the lives of individuals with aphasia, an acquired communication disorder. It's a great way to look at science in our lives. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Join 360 North June 11th through the 14th for a live broadcast of Celebration 2014. Envision our future through the reflections of our past. You'll be energized by 4 days of live celebration, showcasing individuals, families, clans, and communities clad in stunning regalia and coming together in traditional song and dance. Join 360 North June 11th through 14th live at the Centennial Hall in Juneau, Alaska, and only on 360 North and 360north.org.
Hello and welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It's 3:48 p.m. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. You're listening on KTOO News. And our last guest, our next and last guest of the day, is Dr. Nino, Teresa Nino. She's with the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska, and she's going to chat with us via phone about pollen in Juneau. Welcome to the show, Dr. Nino.
Hi, thank you very much.
So what is going on with the crazy pollen in Juneau?
You know, it's been a crazy year with respect to pollen, and it's a blessing and a curse.
Okay, explain.
Well, it's a blessing because it brings me business, and it's a curse to those that are allergic.
That is funny. Okay, so is there a rhyme or reason of pollen? Like, is it something predictable? Like, oh, well, this year is going to be a low pollen, that year is going to be a high pollen.
You know, that would be that's a very complex question, and it has to do with, you know, when the snow goes away, when the sun is out. And, you know, we like to be able to predict, but in general, we're pretty bad at it.
Okay. So what are the negative effects of having so much pollen in the air?
Well, if you're allergic to the pollen, so kind of the biggest in Alaska are alder and birch, you can have lots of nose and eye symptoms, and many people who have allergies, you know, the kind of classic hay fever kind of symptoms, also have asthma. And so you can end up with lots of breathing difficulties and nasal congestion and stuffiness, and your eyes can get swollen shut, and you can be very uncomfortable during the pollen season. This year, even people who don't usually have pollen allergy had significant symptoms, and we think it's because there was just so much particulate in the air that it was an irritant to the nose and eyes and airways.
So there's been a lot of sickness in Juneau, and I'm not saying you said this, I'm going to ask this question. There's been a lot of sickness, upper respiratory sicknesses. I know I had it. I know a lot of friends had it. It really hung in there. Is it possible that it was related to the pollen?
It's possible, but we're also, you know, it's the end of the school year as well, and so kids, it seems like towards the end, they're like, I made it through the end, and then they just crash and have illnesses. So I would say more than likely it was related to the pollen, but it could also be viral infections.
Right. So what can pollen sufferers, if that's the correct terminology, do?
Well, during high pollen counts, high pollen days, you want to stay inside. You want to take a bath or shower at the end of the day, so you don't sleep with the pollens you've accumulated during the day.
Mm.
Maybe wash your face, wash your hands after being outside if you can't take a shower, because you'd be taking showers all day long, which would be kind of crazy. There's lots of medications that can be used. So antihistamines will help with itch. Your providers can prescribe nasal steroids to help decrease some of the nasal congestion and stuffiness. There's an oral medication called Singulair that's a non-steroid anti-inflammatory agent that's very effective at blocking the influx of cells into the nose. Allergy eye drops can be prescribed. And then finally, allergy shots or sublingual drops for just birch could be prescribed by an allergist.
Wow. So it sounds like if pollen is a problem, if you are allergic to pollen, if you're having a reaction to pollen, it sounds like something that you have to go to a doctor. There's nothing over the counter. Like you need to go and see a provider.
You know, if you're just having really mild symptoms, you could go to the store and get some Claritin or Zyrtec or Allegra, because all of those are over-the-counter. Those are antihistamines that help decrease the effects of histamine, so primarily the itchiness that's associated with allergy exposure or allergen exposure. If you have anything more than just a little bit of itch, you probably should see your provider, and they may decide to send you to an allergist. And then you can have skin testing so we can figure out what the relevant allergens are for you and then plot a course from there.
And are you an allergist?
I am an allergist, yes, ma'am.
Okay. And are there upcoming clinics in Juneau?
Yes, ma'am. We will be in Juneau later this month on June 27th.
Okay. Tell us about that. So when you say we, you mean...
So I am based at the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a clinic with my nurse several times per year. We've come to Juneau about 3 or 4 times already, and we see patients by referral, and referrals can be sent to our main office in Anchorage, and we'll see people.
Okay, so did I get this right? I might not have, but you're coming down, you're going to see patients, but if someone's listening, they can't just call and say, ooh, I want to do this. Their provider has to have a referral to see you?
We like to have people's providers because we really want to have the whole team in the loop, and we want their providers to know what's going on and to be active in the decision. If their provider's like, no, you're fine, you don't need to, then we can, on a case-by-case,
basis.
Situation basis, yes, thank you very much, can see patients without referral.
Okay, and if somebody's listening, they want to do that, because I totally understand what you're saying. You're a specialist, so your doctor, you know, refers you to a specialist. So
right.
that makes perfect sense. But if somebody is interested to learn more about your services or feel that their needs don't fit into that box we just described, is there a number they could call?
Yes, they can call our office in Anchorage, and it is 907-562-6228.
Sounds great. And then I have one last question for you. What makes one sort of pollen different than another? Like you were saying, there are specific strands or types in Juneau or Alaska. I'm not sure if you were talking specifically about Juneau. But is one nastier
right.
than the other?
It depends on what the person is allergic to. So if you have, so for example, pretty flowers are not, their pollen isn't allergenic because they have pretty flowers to attract the bugs. If you are like a tree, like a birch tree or some of the grasses, those are windborne, and those are much more problematic for people than a pretty flower pollen because the bugs are going to move that around. So then the question is, well, why are birch more problematic than, say, pine? Well, some of the pollens stay airborne for a longer period of time, so they're going to be more respirable, and we're going to be able to have exposure to them when we breathe them in, as opposed to some of the pollens that are much heavier and they fall out. So they're going to be on your car, on your picnic table, those kind of places. But unless you're, like, sniffing the pollen up your nose, it's probably not going to be as problematic than the lighter, more airborne pollens.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Nino. And any last parting words for pollen sufferers, if that is indeed what they're called?
For pollen sufferers, that's a good way of saying it, or allergy sufferers, the pollen season for trees in Alaska is short, so hang in there. We're almost done.
When is that done?
Usually about mid-June.
Okay.
So
hopefully that's not
there.
The end of our summer either. But
well, I hope not. I hope not.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining us today. We're going to wrap up the show so you could stay with us or go on your way. And I'm sure there's lots of people who are looking forward to seeing you when you come to Juneau later this month.
That'll be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Alrighty, thank all of you for joining us. It's 3:57 p.m., which means it's time to wrap it up and make room for All Things Considered. I want to give you the weather. Tonight, numerous showers, lows around 47, southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, high around 59. Tomorrow night, decreasing clouds, patchy fog late, lows 40 to 45. And Wednesday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny, highs around 61. Wednesday night, mostly clear. Thursday and Thursday night, partly cloudy. And then Friday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain. Thank you for joining us and sharing your day with KTOO News. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And have yourself a great day. All Things Considered is next.